Welcome to yet another edition of the BJ and Bucher podcast on the cycle. Welcome. Glad to be able to do this again. We got a lot to get into. I'm going to start with your friend and mine. First of all, hello, BJ. How are you?
Rick Bucher, I am doing excellent today.
What has you in such a good mood? You look like you're in a good mood.
Just a great day. It's a great day. We got hot topics. We got things to get into. And let's just get right into it. Let's jump right into it for the listeners.
Because you had the great opportunity of playing and winning championships with Michael Jordan. And obviously his social engagement has long been a major topic. And I know how you feel about social causes in general and athletes being involved in social causes. And so the latest news is that Michael donated $2 million, gifts of $1 million, to separate entities that are trying to improve the relationship between law enforcement and the communities that they work in, specifically Black communities and the engagement there. And he also spoke out and said that it's time for me, I can no longer be silent. And so there's been a lot of discussion about that, about why now, what he said, was he really being that active as far as what he said? And so I just wonder, for somebody who knows him as well as you do, for somebody who has a very personal interest in this, coming from the city of Detroit, experiencing life as a Black man, how do you feel about what Michael did and the fact that he did it now?
Let's face it, when he was a very young man, there's a lot of things that was coming at him at that particular time, for whatever the reasons may have been. You know, the one thing I want to first applaud him on is I think he was aware of it then, and I think he's aware of it now. Now, the question is, how do you make the biggest impact? In every community, you know, it takes a village of people. And it takes an idea, a shared idea from those people that live within those communities to come up with solutions and answers. We're not looking for an athlete, an entertainer, or public figures to solve our problems. What we're looking for is to come up with the best solutions that will actually have an impact. And whether that was then or whether that's now, currently we don't have the answers that are solving the problems that exist in our communities. Speaking in the Black communities, when it comes to police enforcement and the people that live in those communities. And that's what we're discussing right now. So at this particular time, the issue and the questions that were back then, were 25 years ago, are still happening and are still going on. So at this point, we don't have the solutions to the problem. And I think now, whether it's Michael Jordan or any other person who, you know, has become aware of their environment, we're looking for solutions and we're willing to discuss those solutions and move forward. And I think for him, whether that was him talking about it then or whether it's him talking about it now, we're not looking for an individual. We're not looking for a hero. This is not just a Michael Jordan problem. This is our problem. And when I say our, the people that live in those community, and that's one that we need to discuss. That's one we need to take ownership of. And that's one that we need to do something about, not just one person.
What was your conversation like with him back in the day when you guys were playing together about these issues?
Well, I think we were all aware, but it was a different time. We all were very young. And it's one thing to identify a problem, but it's another thing to actually offer a solution and execute that solution that you know is going to actually have some impact. Because we all are aware that lives are being affected in the community and outside of the community. And now you can see this has been going on for quite some time. So I think Michael was very thoughtful then. And I think, you know, he's being very thoughtful about what he's doing now.
But how is that? Because I mean, you say he was thoughtful then, and I think there's a lot of people out there who would say, well, but he wasn't doing anything, he wasn't saying anything. I mean, that was along the criticism.
Well, the criticism, look, you can say whatever you want to say. The thoughtfulness comes in not saying anything at all because he's not educated enough. That is not his field of expertise.
Yeah.
I'm going to say that again. That is not Michael Jordan's field of expertise. Just because Michael Jordan is a Black man doesn't give him the expertise to start offering solutions based on fame and popularity.
Right.
Okay. Michael Jordan was just like the rest of us. He ran around on a court in shorts and a tank top. That's his field of expertise. Therefore, at least give him the credit So if you don't have anything to say that's positive or actually have an impact, don't say anything at all.
Right.
At least he had the discipline to do that. And then whenever it was time for him to share whatever he thought was necessary for him to share, for Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan's not speaking for the entire community. Michael Jordan, I want to say, is not taking on the responsibility of all the black communities or black kids in America. Let's make that very clear. But what I am saying is that he was aware of his popularity. He was very aware of the business relationships that he had. And he didn't have a solution at that time that he felt was appropriate. So I respect that. And now whenever he feels the appropriate time for him to give his reasoning for doing it, so be it. Now, just because we may have saw it from a different perspective doesn't mean that he was ready to accept that responsibility, but more importantly, to offer real solutions to real problems.
Did you ever have anybody come at you, being from the part of Detroit that you're from and looking at the success that you had, did you ever have anybody coming at you saying, hey, how come you're not doing this? Or how come you're not involved in this? Or how come you're not standing up for us on this?
Because I am that. See, I never let basketball, fame, money, all those exterior things get in the way. I am that. See, I am all of those things because that's who I am. That's the life that I know.
But did anybody, I mean, because look, we've talked about this before. The way you dress, the way you look, the way you carried yourself when you were growing up is different than the way you do now. And a lot of people judge by exteriors. So did you ever have anybody from the neighborhood? Did you ever have anybody that you grew up with that looked at you and said, oh, you went to the other side. You got out. You're now of that world. What about this world?
No, I didn't. I didn't. And the reason being is because
why do you think you didn't?
Because I actually grew up there. I'm not trying to pretend like I grew up in the suburbs or I grew up somewhere else. I actually grew up there. So there was never a moment. There has never been in a moment where I didn't realize who I was and where I came from.
Right.
So whatever you said about B.J. Armstrong, okay. It really didn't matter to me.
Right.
And I'm saying that because so many times we get into all these things justifying who we are, where we are, where we came from, right? Yeah. I'm not here to like, there's no difference to me to a kid growing up in the suburbs of Detroit to a kid who grew up in the city of Detroit. That means absolutely nothing. Street cred and all those things, I'm the same person. Okay. Now, the one thing that I will say is, I think for many of us who are Black Americans, okay, we are very aware as Black Americans of the diversity within our own culture. Mm. I'm going to say that again. Those of us who are Black Americans are very aware of the diversity within our own culture. So what difference does it make if you grew up in Detroit, in the city of Detroit, or if you grew up in the suburbs, or you grew up in
Nashville,
Tennessee?
Well, when I say when you grew up in North Carolina, you grew up in rural North Carolina, as
okay.
Michael did, versus the way you grew up. How different is that experience?
That's a different experience all in itself. So now, let's not group all of Black people together and say, well, they have a shared experience no matter where they grew up.
Yeah.
So when I hear these questions, the limitations of the questions are so obvious. So now I'm going to place this on Michael Jordan. He didn't grow up that way.
Right.
Come on. He didn't grow up that way. He didn't grow up in a major metropolitan city like Detroit or New York or Los Angeles. He grew up in North Carolina.
Sure.
It's a different set of issues there.
Sure.
But because he's Black, all of a sudden now he's going to know what's going on in the city of Chicago. Come on. I'm not buying that one. Now, we can sit here and No. Let's address the issue. That was a young man who was doing something at that particular time. Now, as he has grown and had kids of his own, now he felt maybe a different need to respond. I don't know. I'm not speaking for him, but what I am saying is the things that we're seeing, the issue that we're discussing now, the relationship between the citizens that live in those communities and the law enforcement and people who are serving the community, there seems to be a strain.
Yes.
Now,
hasn't there always been, though? Hasn't there always been? I mean, how new is this? We're talking about it now. I feel as if all we're doing is becoming cognizant of an issue that has been there for decades.
Well,
like, what's new? What's different?
Well, I think what's new is now that we're beginning to see the pictures. We're beginning to see the videos. We're beginning to actually see the things that we've heard.
Okay, but it's not as if those things weren't going on before. We just now have visual evidence, and we can't pretend they don't exist.
The Rodney King incident was significant that it gave us a visual of something that only we heard about or was talked about.
Right, right. Or we saw video from years ago and thought that somehow that didn't happen anymore.
Okay. Exactly. So now when you're telling a story and then you can put a visual to it, it has a more meaningful impact. And more importantly, it's giving us an opportunity to do something about it within our communities. That's the key. What are we going to actually do about it?
Right.
Is the most important thing. And that is my calling to the experts of all of the millions of people that live in these communities, the experts, the people that are there on the front line. Those are the people who we should be calling the teachers, the people who are serving the communities who have a direct impact on our youth. Don't buy into me as a Black American that every time something happens, we got to call on the athletes and the entertainers. No, let's get back to where it should be, back in the communities where we take ownership for it. More importantly, the people that are on the front line and the people who are experts who deal with this each and every day. Now we're talking about a solution. Don't give me this athlete who comes out and says something and then he has the most Twitter followers or whatever. And then we put it on all of these little outlets where they can get it's being read 5 or 6 million times. No, let's get there where they're actually going to have an impact with the people, because those people live there every day and it's a 24-hour job. And there are people who are qualified to deal with these type of situations, have been trained in these situations, but more importantly, offer real solutions for real problems. And these people are the people that I'm calling on.
So you played in Chicago for a long time. You called Chicago home for a very long time. This is something you and I have never really talked about. There is violence going on in Chicago. There is murder going on in Chicago, in a part of Chicago, on a daily basis that seems to be largely ignored by everyone. And the fact, I can't help that our president comes from Chicago. One of his closest advocates is now the mayor of Chicago. And I think about what's going on, and I think in ways this should be a crisis of the greatest order. And yet, it just seems to continue to go on and everybody looks the other way. As someone who is ingrained in Chicago, has ties there as deeply as you do, what do you make of that situation and what is being or not being done about it?
What I make of the situation is this. It's easy to place blame and look at other people to solve your problems. Okay. Mm-hmm. I have a blue collar background, and my family's always stressed. And where I'm from is you get up, you play your part, and you take your responsibility. So for me to look outside of myself for help, it just seems like a cop out to me. It seems like a cop out for me to play race cards. It seems like a cop out to me to start asking other people to solve my problems or our problems within our community. The one thing that has always, understanding is the solution to every problem that I've ever seen. Now, what does that mean? That means we have to educate the masses and the people there so that everyone can understand what it is we're trying to do and accomplish here. Understanding is the solution. How do we get people to understand? Through our educational system. Once we are able to give people an opportunity to understand, educate these young men, these young women, that are in our communities, who will be the next mayors and the next presidents and the next CEOs and the next broadcasters and the next generation of professionals moving forward, we give those people hope. We give these people opportunities. We give these people an opportunity to provide for themselves. We give them an opportunity to see the future. We give them all the things that you and I, Rick, have had an opportunity to experience in this country, but more importantly, in this world. Many of those kids, I will never forget the story. I was in, I went to visit the school in Chicago. In the city of Chicago, I think it was on the south side of Chicago, I go visit a school. And
this is why you were playing?
This is why I was playing. And okay. This kid had told me he'd never seen Lake Michigan.
Hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. I was about 24, 25 years of age, and that made an impact on me because I would drive by Lake Michigan almost every day. Here's a kid who had lived there, was 14, 15 years old, had never seen Lake Michigan. Now, I couldn't gather that idea. I couldn't grasp the idea then, and it has remained with me, and I'm 48 now.
Yeah. Because just because he was in his community, he was in his in neighborhood, his and he never ventured outside of that.
Outside of his neighborhood. Now, you and I, Rick, have been all around this country, all around this world, and here was a kid that lives right in the city of Chicago,
yeah,
and hadn't ventured 10 minutes to see Lake Michigan once. One time, Rick.
So is that on him?
What we're saying, Rick, is...
I don't know, but I just mean, as far as we know the value of seeing things beyond our little circle, of breaking out of our circle, with others.
So the importance, Rick, of getting outside of our environment is critical to the development of young people.
Mm-hmm.
It's critical to the development of young people. These are young people.
Yeah.
If they never have an opportunity to expand and grow and evolve, what are we really expecting as adults? So I'm not here. Is that on him?
Well, yeah, yeah, but see, here's the thing.
You would do better if you knew better.
I get that. But the heart of it is it the responsibility of reaching into that community to pull him out? Or is it that community, the responsibility to push him out?
It's our responsibility to offer a great education to every young person that's walking around on this planet. Not just here in the States, but on this planet. Now, whether or not you take advantage of that, Rick,
right?
Now that's on you. But to be able to at least give you a chance, Rick, all I want is a chance.
Sure.
Okay, because I grew up in the city of Detroit. The school system problems that you see in the city of Detroit that you see now are the same ones that existed then.
Right, right.
My grandfather came to me and said, hey, son, I didn't get a chance to go to school. My grandfather grew up in the South. He said, all I'm asking you to do is take advantage of that book right there and read that book. And once you know everything that's in that book, then you make your choice on whether it's true or not. But at least read it, because I didn't even have that choice.
Hmm. Do you
Now, many don't have a grandfather or a sibling or uncle or someone to even challenge you in that way. Whether or not you believe what's in that book, you make that choice, but at least read it so you can know what it is you're missing or you're gaining.
Yeah.
That it always encouraged me to say, you know what, before I give my opinion, that's why I respect people who have the discipline not to say anything, because maybe you don't know anything about that. And you have to be aware of that too.
Right.
Just because you are popular or famous, you just can't just go talking and saying whatever you want to say. Freedom of speech means freedom of death.
So freedom of what?
Freedom of speech is your freedom of death. Okay? Just because you got the freedom don't mean you really have to say something.
Right.
And don't mean that you're saying something right just because you can say, you know, you can just get on the microphone or start saying what you really want to say.
Right.
So again, have the discipline to know what it is you know and what it is you don't know, but be respectful to what it is you know and what you don't know.
I get that. But the second part, we talked about this before, is the responsibility I have is if I don't know, find out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, ignorance may be bliss, but ignorance is not an excuse. I'm with you with the idea that we don't have to speak, that it's not, we're not compelled to speak on everything simply because we have the megaphone to be heard. I agree with that 100%. I want to switch here and get to something else that I actually did not tell you we were going to talk about, but it's been in my face, and I've had to discuss it on some of my other platforms a multitude of times. And obviously, Russell Westbrook is a client of the Wasserman Media Group, of which you are a part of and an agent with. And by the way, do you have it like with Arn Tellem being in Detroit? Do you, like, did your title evolve? Did you get new business cards? Are you executive something? Did you go from like?
No, I am again.
Nothing? You didn't like nothing? Bigger office? You know, nothing? Who, by the way, who got his office? Who's in his office?
I don't know who's in his office.
Stop it. You know who's in his office.
I don't know who's in his office.
Is it vacant? Is it a storage closet now?
You know,
that's a nice office. I've seen Arn's office. That's a nice office. You're telling me nobody's walked into that office and said, yeah, I'll camp here.
Titles are really funny things.
Don't get philosophical.
I'm not getting philosophical.
I'm asking you a specific question.
And I'm giving you a specific answer. As an agent, yes. I have yet to experience a player walk in my office and say, would you represent me because you have a nice office?
That's not the question I asked. I'm just curious about the
offices and titles and all those things mean absolutely nothing to me then.
Yeah.
It means absolutely nothing to me now. And when a player really cares about my office size and my title, and if that helps me get a player, I'll give you the greatest office you've ever seen. I'll give you the greatest title. No player has ever cared about my office or even asked me about my title. So if it doesn't affect my bottom line, it doesn't matter. Like, I mean, it's like you're thinking like, you got a fancy office. I'm coming with you, BJ. So again, when it does affect my bottom line, when it affects my bottom line, it does.
So if nobody's using it, can I have it? Can I have Arn's office?
You can have it.
Okay, make sure, because I am part of the Wasserman Media Group. So,
and the office is yours.
That is a sweet office. Thank you. Hey, I don't want the title. I don't want the title.
What are you going to do with that office? Yeah, sure. No problem. It's all yours.
Beautiful, beautiful. So, Russ Westbrook, client of Wasserman Media Group. There has been so much made of Kevin Durant leaving Oklahoma City, going to the Golden State Warriors, and the narrative has been consistently, well, KD didn't get along with Russ. KD didn't think he could win with Russ. That's why he left. It's Russ. And I haven't been around them a lot in the last year or two. Prior to that, them going to Oklahoma City, their early years, I was around them a lot. I went out to lunch with when James was still there, James, KD, Russ. I've seen them interact. I have a hard time believing in the narrative that their relationship was as broken as people make it to be. So I ask you, with the insight that you have, what do you make of KD leaving and the reasons behind it as they pertain to Russ Westbrook?
That's two questions. What do I make it of it leaving? I think Kevin Durant, as any player should, as any player that goes into free agency, should do what's best for them. I would love to think it's more complicated than that, but it's not. And I think this young man thought carefully about how he wants his team to look, how he wants, what style he wants to play. But more importantly, the thing I thought Kevin Durant did a terrific job in, and I don't know, and I didn't speak with him, is, you know, this is Kevin's 10th year coming into the NBA. And as you get older in this league, the things you did in year 2, 3, 4, you just can't do it 12, 13, 14 in those years. And I think Kevin Durant has made an excellent basketball decision for himself. I really do. I think what he did was, because this kid, you know, even though he's young, he's got a lot of miles on that body. And I think Kevin Durant really made a conscious effort to say, you know what, if I'm going to be playing for the next 3 to 5 years, okay, and in 5 years, this is going to be a 14-year veteran.
Yeah.
Okay? Okay?
Hey, and by the way, answer this for me, because I often have this. People look at the calendar age of a guy and they say, oh, well, he's 30 or
no,
he's
no, this 31. This kid's playing a lot of minutes. This kid's got a lot of minutes on this body.
Right.
This kid's been playing 30 minutes a game since he's been in this league. Okay, 30 minutes is 30 minutes. I don't care if you're 18 or you're 32.
But as you played, the accumulation of the minutes that you had played in the league and the grind of them, maybe I don't know if there's a formula for how much the grind of playoff minutes are greater than regular season minutes, but did you feel like the tread literally was coming off? Like, you physically get to a point where your body never comes back to a place. It doesn't regenerate as you move forward?
Well, you don't get to that. You get to a point where you just don't recover as quickly as you did.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, instead of...
And that has to do with minutes more than age?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
When you're playing those type of minutes, 35 to 40 minutes a night in this league, right?
Mm.
That takes his pounding on you. Minutes are minutes. I don't care what age you are. You know, the thing that great players do, and we're talking about Kevin Durant, is your game has to evolve. The young player that I saw, Michael Jordan, and I always like to tease Michael and all these guys when, you know, everyone starts talking about which team is the greatest. Is it the 90 this team or the 85 this team, the 98? And I always ask the same question. Could the 98 Jordan who was shooting fadeaways?
Yeah.
Beat the Jordan of 92 who was attacking the basket.
Yeah.
and just had those young legs.
And the answer is hell no.
And the answer is absolutely no. Because that Jordan in 92 who was attacking the basket, he had what every player needs to be a basketball player. He provided the effort and the energy every night. And that kid, that young kid at 92 was willing to give you the first effort, the second effort, the third effort, and whatever was necessary. At 98, we all get a little smarter.
Right.
In year 10, we say, you know what?
We have to.
If you're going to perform. Now, what I admire about great players is some of them age very gracefully.
Okay.
And Kevin Durant right now is at a space where I think he's realizing, you know what? These young guys are getting – the first time I saw Allen Iverson – I thought, whoa.
Yeah.
Like, I was like 9 or 10 years in the league. Yeah. I was like, man, I don't know if I got the energy to take this guy.
I vividly remember
that. When I saw this guy, I was like, thank goodness that when you're young, you don't know. He was just running around. But the effort that it took to just chase him around, I was like, wow, I got to really question that, especially on a back-to-back night. And I remember thinking that, like, God, thank goodness this guy doesn't really know how to play yet. Because if he did, this would be a major problem.
I remember you talking. This is after you were out of Chicago. This is when you were in Golden State. And you were talking about guys being so quick that your only form of defense was just to run into them.
Yeah, exactly. Like, when I first saw Jason Kidd for the first time, here's a guy who was like 6'5". I was like, this is unfair that a guy can be this fast, this strong. And he was, like, young. I was like, God, this guy, like, went to school for, like, 1 year. And he's like, I was like, this is, like, unfair. But, again, when you're older, you question things like that. When you're young, you know, you're just like, whatever. The game is fast. You play fast. I think Kevin Durant right now just made a great decision for him because he surrounded himself with great people and a great organization that fits his style. And now it's just a matter of them finding the chemistry, getting the reps together, and growing together for the next 3 to 5 years.
Okay, but this is the thing I struggle with. Because people look at Russ and they point to Russ as he's somehow, and I think it's because of the position that he plays. The image that we have of a point guard, he's supposed to be doing nothing but distributing and setting up. And as we know, that Russ is, you don't define him as a classic point guard. But I look at the energy that he plays with.
Oh, man.
And the success that he has, and the fact that he is one of those guys that I think brings it every single night. And I'm troubled by this criticism or this viewpoint that he's difficult to play with, or he's not a good teammate, or like he's the reason that KD would leave, and that guys don't want to come to Oklahoma City because of Russ. And I ask you this, and obviously it's not totally objective because he's a client, but I have a problem with that viewpoint.
Well, I think it's ridiculous to say people don't want to play with Russell, okay? If you don't want to play with Russell, this kid is an incredible worker. He's incredibly loyal. And this kid here plays to win, night in and night out,
yeah.
Okay? To see where he's come from and evolve as a basketball player from when I first saw him play in high school to playing in college and he wasn't a point guard to now where he's playing, where he's not only initiating offenses and on the defensive side, which people tend to forget, he is a phenomenal defender. But to see how he has grown and be able to be a foundation player in an organization and in this league, Russell Westbrook is one of the top 5 to 10 players in this league, year in and year out. The reality is that this kid brings it.
Yeah.
The reality is this kid loves the game. This kid is one of the hardest working kids I've seen in any era, in any generation. Okay. Some players can play in any generation. Russell Westbrook is one of them. I don't care if it was in 1946 or 2016.
Yeah.
Russell Westbrook can play for me in any time because he brings it. Now, to see what he has done, this kid has contributed to the bottom line, which is winning. He's contributed to the bottom line. As you know, and you've heard me say this time and time again, it is hard to win in this league. Mm-hmm. This kid has consistently won. And every year that him and Kevin Durant was on that team, they had a shot, a legit shot. Now, did they win it? Yeah, they didn't. But you know what? Every year they were in the game.
Yeah.
Every year they could have had a shot could have gone here, a break there, a loose ball or what have you. That's the difference between winning and losing in this league. But you got to give them credit that when you look back on it, Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant had a great run at it. They had a great run at it together, and they both evolved into top-tier players. And Kevin Durant was MVP playing with Russell Westbrook. That's a fact.
Right.
And you can't take that away from him.
And 4-time leading scorer.
Absolutely. So
I got that. You mentioned being a foundation of a franchise. And you, again, have a part in this. And this is always a tricky thing because people are looking at it and saying, well, supposedly the Thunder have asked Russ, you know, are you staying? Are you going to sign an extension? He hasn't said that. He hasn't agreed to that. At the same time, does not want to be traded, wants to stay there. And this is the tricky part as I see it for a franchise player, which is you want to keep your options open. Right? This is a two-way street. You want to know that they're doing what they can on their end. You just, hey, pledge allegiance and forget it. You don't want to make promises you can't keep. You want to see how things evolve and leave your options open. But at the same time, being able to say, I'm going to stay or I plan on being here, how do you have that conversation with the franchise so they can plan accordingly to build around you without necessarily, you know, committing to something that you may not be able to hold up? How do you go about brokering that?
Well, you know, when you look at these players and you see these players, and I sit down and talk with clients, first thing I said, you know what? Find out what it is you really want to do. What is it you really want to do? You got two choices. Leaders lead, followers follow. Now, which one do you want to be?
Yeah.
Either you're going to lead or you're going to get out of the way. Too many times I see players who want to get paid like a superstar but don't want the responsibility of a superstar. First, figure out which one you really are and be honest with yourself. And if you want to lead, lead. And you take that responsibility and you take it seriously. If there's anything that I will say today that I see is the lack of leadership in our game today. Today, yesterday, and I say yesterday, the stars, the Magic Johnsons and those guys, the Larry Birds, the Michael Jordans, they were leaders in every essence of the word. They led their franchises. They took the responsibility to come back every year better. They took the responsibility of winning and losing. They took the responsibility when they didn't provide their biggest games in the biggest moments. Today, you see it all the time. Guy averaged 15 points a game. He's a max player. How's that? Wait a minute. How's that work? How's that work? The numbers now are skewing into things that have no place when you're putting together a team. I was having a conversation with a guy earlier today. Actually, it was an executive. And we were talking about how do you put together a team. And he was like, you know, one of the things we should all have to do just as our practice is that all 30 GMs should have to go to an open gym and select a team on the fly without numbers.
You mean without statistics?
Without statistics.
Without contracts?
Just like you and I do, Rick.
Yeah,
what we used to do as a kid. You go to a pickup and you watch a guy shoot a free throw. You go, oh, man, that guy can't play. Because you know if you lose in that pickup game, you're going to sit out for like an hour or two.
Right.
Every year to sharpen our skills, we should have to just go to an open gym and pick a team without analytics, without scouting. Just go to the gym and watch Rick Bucher and B.J. Armstrong shoot a free throw and make a determination. I don't like the guy's socks. Every year, those guys should have to just go and sharpen their skill set and have to put together a team, not based on all these other factors. Oh, I need cap space. I need cap room. I need shooting. No, Rick, you and I know we grew up in the era where you went to the gym and you go, man, if we lose, we might not get back on the floor again.
Right. And I can't have that guy because all he does is shoot. He doesn't defend and he can't make a shot.
Now, Rick, that's what's missing.
Yeah.
That's what's missing now. So the leadership, because the leadership now, we've gotten so far away from what the game is really all about. It's about just going out there and winning and playing and giving your best. Now we got to play with pace.
Right.
Now we got to switch and we got to have versatility and all. No, just get the guys who are going to compete and show up and play. What happened to that, Rick?
Yeah.
What happened to that?
Yeah.
What happened to the beauty of the game where guys just showed up and just played basketball?
Honestly, what I think has happened is that you have more and more people who haven't grown up with that game, haven't had that experience, don't love and understand the game because of the intangibles of you go out there and you read how guys play and how they fit together, and this is what's going to allow me to win. We're looking for formulas and other things that are on a piece of paper to tell me what works. And as you and I both believe wholeheartedly, that is not... I was reading this thing the other day. This guy was breaking down whether the 2004 team or the current team are better or worse as Olympic teams. And it got into win shares from their NBA teams. And I was like, what? Like, what? How about we talk about the game? How about we talk about how guys play win shares? Are you kidding me?
No, the thing that made the Dream Team so special, you know, and talking to the players who played on that team, talking to the coaches who coached that team, was they had incredible leadership. Yeah. They had incredible leadership from the top down. Everyone understood their role within that group. And everyone accepted that group. The maturity level of that group putting together the caliber of players that they put on that team, maybe it was just the right timing, but their leadership was amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. And that's what you look for when you look at all these all-star teams and all of these Olympic teams now, is the leadership that's going to come. I'm interested to see who evolves as the leader of this U.S. Olympic team.
Yeah.
Who's going to evolve as the – I'm not worried about who scores the most points, who gets the most rebound. The leadership is going – I'm interested to see who evolves in this group, in this era, is going to evolve and say, I'm going to take responsibility of this team to make sure that we come out as a group, we finish as a group, but more importantly, that this shared experience we have, we're going to take this very serious. That's the guy I'm looking to see evolve on this team.
That's so. It's interesting you say that because I had Charles Barkley on my show, radio show the other day, and he was talking about how the '92 team was the greatest experience that he'd had, and the 96 team was the worst experience that he'd ever had. And I thought about, because half of the 92 team was part of that 96 team. But then I think about the guys who weren't on the 96 team and the absence of leadership. And Chuck was talking about, you know, guys complaining about their playing time and whether they were starting or not. And I look at the various periods of whether the team USA has been good or bad or something that we took pride in or not. And you're right. It didn't have to do with the talent as much as it had to do with the presence or the absence of leadership. We're speaking of Team USA, the last topic I wanted to get to here on the BJ and Bucher podcast on the cycle is the fact that you've been on both sides of this equation when it comes to the national team and the shoe company involvement in it. You were in it when Derrick Rose was on the team, obviously with Adidas, and now Draymond Green is on the team and he's with Nike. And as we know, this is a Nike sponsored event. And I've often heard about how if you're not a Nike client on the national team, you don't get treated amazingly as amazing as this might sound, you don't get treated the same way if you're with another shoe. And somebody even suggested that there was a photo of this team, Klay Thompson being with Anta, a Chinese shoe company, and they found a way of presenting the photograph so that his shoes were not visible. I mean, this is at the heart of some of your business and what you do as an agent with your clients. What's it like? How aware are you of this factor, considering you've had clients on both sides of the equation?
Well, I've had clients on both sides, and
I mean, is this a real thing?
Well, I think what it is this.
Is this a real thing?
It's real in this sense is that Nike is a corporate sponsor, of the Olympics.
Okay,
it's a real thing that Nike is not going to have Anta shoes in one of its posters. That's a real thing. Nike is not going to have an Adidas player with their shoes talking about, you know,
okay, but Nike's not taking this picture. Team USA is.
Okay. The thing is, every player is, I share this with them. Do not let the business and the politics get in the way of your experience. Now, Nike paid X amount of dollars to have its name, the official sponsor, on there.
Right.
That's the corporate. Coach K, when the game is 84-84, the last minute of a game, is not going to care if you were Anta, Peak, Adidas, Puma, New Balance. He'll play Rick Bucher if he thought it was going to help him win that game.
Hey, Bucher and your Skechers, get the hell out there, man. I need a bucket.
Exactly. So I get it. These are nice things. The ego loves to like, but in the end, I can assure you that those coaches want to get the best players. And what people will remember from this event is in 2016, Team USA did X. They're not going to care what shoes they had, what that poster meant, and all those things. Let's not let the corporate people get in the way of what's going to happen in between those lines. Let's play basketball. Let's enjoy the experience. Let's enjoy the people and do all those things and not let that get in the way. Because in the end, it's meaningless.
Okay.
Who cares?
Okay.
Who cares?
Got it. But I'm just curious, just to be clear. So we're talking about subtleties. Like, okay, we take a photograph and they try to hide a pair of shoes. I mean, in the big scheme of things, you're right. Well, what does that really mean, right?
Yeah.
What is that? Is that something to get bothered about? But is that the only way in which players that are not Nike athletes are conscious of this being a Nike sponsored team? Does it go anywhere beyond that? Is there any way in which if you're not a Nike player that you are treated different on that team?
I don't think you're treated different. I just think Nike has certain things that they're doing to promote their players in that setting. So if you are a Nike athlete in Rio, Nike is going to take its Nike athletes and promote them. They're not going to bring another athlete to promote them.
But are you getting perks on that team being a Nike athlete that you don't get if you're an Adidas or an Anta or...
I don't know what a perk. Everybody's getting a uniform. What's a perk? Like, what's a perk?
Perk is like if they're giving iPads to everybody on the team, and you're an Adidas guy, you're not getting an iPad.
I think all of these guys are making enough money where if they want to buy an iPad,
I understand that, but that's not true. I'm just asking. Have you ever had that experience where there's swag that is provided, and it's provided to the Nike guys, but not the...
I really don't think that matters. I mean, honestly, Rick,
it matters. I'm just saying, does it happen?
Maybe. I don't know. I haven't been...
You haven't experienced that. You haven't seen
it. I haven't experienced it. I haven't seen it. I'm not in those meetings. Right. I'm not trying to be in those meetings.
Okay. I've heard that. I've heard... Yeah. I didn't come up with iPad. A couple of years ago, I heard...
You know, give me a couple of weeks. I'm going to verify that for you and get back... Because I'm going to be down there in Rio.
Yes.
And I'm going to
see. Oh, my God, you are.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going down there, and I'm going to see it, and I'll tell you firsthand. But
you didn't like Vegas. How are you going to like Rio?
You know, look, I have a job to do.
Yeah.
Which is to go and...